Hello, what have we here?
Hey everyone, welcome back to Resistance Radio. It's episode 76. Hope you all enjoyed last week's show, because this week it's all about Biggs Darklighter. As always, I'm Mikey and I'm joined by my co-host, Danya.
Hey everyone, how you doing?
Hey Danya. We're good, yes. And as you can hear, we also have Ben with us this week. Hey, Ben.
Hello.
Sorry. How you doing today, again. Ben? That's all right. How you doing?
I'm okay.
I'm doing good.
Apparently attempting his best Mikey impression there.
Apparently. He's trying. All right.
It's okay.
If you want to get involved in the conversation, you can get a hold of us on Twitter at rradiopodcast. Leave a comment on our Facebook page, send us an email through our website, resistanceradio.net, or leave a comment on this post when it goes up on hypable.com. Today's podcast is brought to you by audible.com. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/resistanceradio. With over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player, get the latest Star Wars audiobook for free, including the new Princess Leia book, which is amazing on both audiobook and just reading it. It involves a planet that we're going to see in The Last Jedi, as well as the Phasma book just came out too. And there's also an Audible version of that, so definitely check them out. I will tell you, listening to audiobooks is a fun way if you drive. I drive fairly often, and it's one of those things I do in the car, because I can't read and drive. That would be unsafe. Anyway.
Yeah, let's not do that, because don't text and drive.
Don't text and drive. Do audiobooks instead of texting and driving.
Yes. Right.
Yeah, that's the moral of the story, or something like that. Anyway, moving on.
Yes. Guys, if you want to support us, we've also launched a Patreon as well. You can check it out at patreon.com/resistanceradiopodcast. Some perks that you can get from there, depending on the level that you pledge at, is you can join our Discord chat. We just hang around, talk about Star Wars stuff, especially news as it breaks, and just have a little bit of fun, talk about hockey, talk about Voltron, anything and everything. We have a good time in there. You can also listen to us while we record these episodes in our recording studio. You can join us for our movie nights when we do our audio commentary all the Star Wars films. We just did Attack of the Clones, which, has that gone up? Or is it going up?
It's going up. I just got your audio the other day, and it's a long thing file.
Yeah. So that will be going up soon. So if you are a patron, you will be able to download that and listen if you weren't able to join us live. And also, we have our After Dark episodes up there. So we have two episodes of our After Dark series up now. If you want to try it out before you buy, so to speak, you can listen to the first one, which is called Potter Wars, where we discuss Star Wars' 40th anniversary and Harry Potter's 20th, and compared and contrasted. And Mikey got a little wild, but...
Never get wild!
And if
it's like a party.
If you can't afford to support us via Patreon, we do also have merchandise for sale on our website. We've got t-shirts and button packs available. And as always, even if you can't afford to support us, feel free to share the link, both podcast or for the channels through which you support us and someone else.
Alright, it's time for the news, which I guess I made that sound really, really excited. And no one
I
know,
I wanted there to be like music, like do-do-do-do-do-do-do, you know, like the news.
Yeah,
music.
But you guys didn't see, I put my hand up in the air. I was like, it's time for the news, like kind of like Harry Potter at the end of a movie. Anyway, moving on. Star Wars has its first Force Awakens direct sequel here. No, it's not The Last Jedi, which is going to be a sequel. But the Captain Phasma comic from Marvel starts just a little bit before Force Awakens ends. It happens right after she gets taken into the trash compactor. So the first issue of the Captain Phasma comic is out. It's going to be a 4-episode arc. It's pretty awesome. She basically, after she gets out of the trash compactor, she commandeers a TIE fighter to leave Starkiller Base, and she also notices Kylo Ren battling out there in the woods. but she runs across a BB unit. Can you guys guess which BB unit that is?
Oh, it's BB Hate.
No, they didn't name him BB 8.
I'm calling the droid that. I know it's BB-9E, but it's BB-8.
Yes.
Someone also called it Darth Ball.
Darth Ball, yeah.
That's awesome. I like that one.
I love.
The nice part about this is, obviously, as we start to see that, you know, the Phasma starts to, you know, came out of, you know, survived Starkiller Base and will obviously be in The Last Jedi, all of the, you know, trailers that we've seen. Seeing BB-9E in it, it's kind of fun, because is this going to be that BB-9E is going to be Phasma's droid?
Oh, that'd be cool.
Yeah, so Phasma's got the silver armor. She's got a little black BB unit next to her. I don't know. It's kind of cool. So,
well, it's like obviously a BB-8, but it's like the black series.
Yeah,
just like the action.
It's a special edition. It's not just BB-9. It's got a letter after the E at the end. Stands for the edition. It's like an Apple product, you know,
or it's like the edition, it's like the model, the fifth edition of BB-9.
Yeah, or something like you know, it's like a Tesla or something like that. You know, it's a very special, you know, Model X or something like that. But Model 9E.
It's got go faster stripe.
It's got a squared off kind of head instead of just a dome on top of a dome. Yeah. Anyway, but yeah, so the new Phasma comic is out. It's definitely worth a check if you haven't gotten it yet. If you have an app, an iOS device, you can download the Marvel app. It's $3.99 in there. Definitely worth. Very fun to read on iPad because it's just like having a comic. Plus, it zooms in, makes it really easy to follow the comic panels if you're not a comic book person per se. So it's really nice. This is definitely a comic I am excited about. You know what's really interesting? Is we're getting a lot of Phasma stuff leading up to this movie. What do you guys think about that? We have not only the Phasma comics that are coming out right now, but we have the Phasma book that just came out.
I mean, I feel like that's a double-edged sword. I wonder if we're getting all of this content because we're not going to focus that heavily on Phasma in the movies.
That's a good point.
So,
maybe. Yeah. Well, I wonder if it's also because maybe she is focused on more in the movies. Because obviously, this right here is telling us what happened to Phasma right after we last saw her in The Force Awakens. And the Phasma book, which we're going to cover in a couple weeks, you know, it's one of those things where that takes place. And it's not even so much her, but it takes place about learning her backstory. And her, you know, the cardinal character is the person who is trying to piece out who her background character is because, you know, he's a rival. So it's interesting because we're learning all this backstory to her. We're learning what she did right afterwards. And she was featured pretty prominently in the trailer, more so than I think in the Force Awakens trailer.
Yeah. Maybe they want to sell more toys.
That's actually what I was just about to say is, like, she's a really cool toy, you know,
because she's shiny.
Like, shiny and cool, shiny with a blaster and like has a cape, and come on, like, who doesn't want an action figure of that?
Yeah, okay. I mean, it's
especially
it's
if she
kind
comes
of
with
the Darth Vader effect, isn't it?
Oh yeah, yeah. That's, well, the Boba Fett effect,
I guess. Yeah, I mean, I was thinking like Darth Vader effect from the first movie where nuts over Darth Vader dice when like you basically got nothing about him in the first movie, right?
Well, he was still, I mean, but he was still the chief, like, villain, even if he wasn't in it very much, whereas, like,
no, Tarkin was the chief villain. Tarkin was the chief villain in A New Hope.
I mean, kind of. Stained. Like, I don't actually pay attention to how little he's in the A New Hope, because I just think he's in it a crap ton.
You're right. All the bad things that happen.
I was going to say, what's really interesting is I finally, because if you've listened to the previous episode, I finally actually got to go to a store to
day. I saw all the pictures.
I did. Yeah, so I went to go and have a look and see what merch was left, because, like I said on that show, I wanted, like, the Thrawn Black series and Hera figure and the Luke, and kind of got there and was like, oh, there's not... Well, there was, like, a lot of stuff still there, but nothing that I wanted. The one thing I will say is that I might drop the photo in the Discord, because if you zoom in, you will notice that every single Black Series figure that's left is Kylo Ren.
Oh, nice.
Like, every other character is sold out.
I'm still a fan. I'm gonna stand with Kylo Ren, if not popular anymore. Or ever was. I don't know.
I don't think he ever was.
I think definitely the helmet...
Definitely not as popular as they thought he was going to be. In fact, sure. I think Phasma was significantly more popular.
And I think Kylo Ren with a helmet would sell more toys, whereas in this one, he is not advertised during the trailer with a helmet.
Yeah.
You know, actually, the helmet's shattered in the trailer, so like we know it's not going to be... Yeah, exactly. So
with Phasma, I don't know. I kind of really want to see like a showdown of some kind between her and Finn. Like, I want to see them come up against each other considering their backstory and their history, and then obviously altercation that they have on Starkiller Base as well. Like, I want to see the follow-up to that.
What if she throws him in a trash compactor?
him and Rose get in a trash compactor, and they so BB-8's up. Shut down all the trash compactors on the tension level. I mean, exactly. Yeah, just like that.
That'd be
anyway,
fun.
So... A little side note about this, you know, with all the Phasma stuff coming out too, we also have the Princess Leia book too, which I will tell you is absolutely amazing. Ties directly into the new film. We are going to be doing two different episodes, one dedicated to the Phasma book and one dedicated to the Princess Leia book. Danya is going to be the person to decide when that is because living across the pond, she doesn't have the books available yet.
The hardcover copy of book came out 2 days, so I may actually just bite the bullet by that one, because it's basically the same amount as the audiobook, and I would rather have a hardcover physical copy than an ebook, personally, if I'm going to spend that much money on the book. So I might just order it, get it sent here, and then I can start reading that. Because I really want to, because I love all of Claudia Gray's stuff.
Oh, yeah. I forgot Claudia Gray wrote the Princess Leia book. That's probably why I like it so much so far.
Anyway. She's written all of, like, the really good
Books, yeah. Books. Yeah, she's written
all the Leia books that'd be great at, like, her.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, anyway. Moving on. The next big bit of news, like, the most important bit of news that came out, is a statement. Too. I know, right? A statement regarding Episode 9. Lucasfilm and Colin Trevorrow have mutually chosen to part ways on Star Wars Episode 9. Colin has been a wonderful collaborator throughout the development process, but we have all come to the conclusion that our vision for the project differ. We wish Colin the best and will be sharing more information about the film soon. Another one bites the dust. And another one, and like, seriously, this is the fourth director? Like,
yeah, so you were thinking of that. And I was thinking, ding dong, the witch is dead.
It was the two for Han Solo, and then it's him.
And
it was the
before that, so Josh Trank was the very first.
Oh,
one.
That's right, I forgot about.
He
I
was
going
to do. He was supposed to be. It was going to be one of the first. It was instead of a Han Solo film, it was supposed to be a Boba Fett solo film. It was actually even at Star Wars Celebration Europe that Danya was at. There's pictures of the title card, the kind of keynote, with his name there saying Boba Fett solo film, and they just kind of glossed over it that he left. Basically what happened, like if you don't remember Josh Trank, is the last film he did that was major was Fantastic Four, the most recent one.
I think you mean Fantastic.
Yeah,
is in the middle of it.
Oh my god.
Yeah. But basically before the film even came out in theaters, before the film hit theaters, he went on a Twitter rant saying the film is horrible, don't go see it, blah 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 blah. And I will say, the film was pretty horrible. I did watch it just for the sake of watching it.
It was, horrible is being kind.
Yeah, it was pretty bad. So like, bad. It makes, like, the early 90s version, not the one with Jessica Alba, but the one that they made just to keep the rights to Fantastic Four, like, actually kind of fun compared to it. It was pretty bad. But regardless, he went on a rant saying horrible things about the studio and everything, and obviously Disney and Lucasfilm are just not going to have any of that. So he was the first one off, and we haven't heard anything about a Boba Fett film since then. And then we have Phil Miller and Chris Lord, who got the boot for, you know, a Han Solo film with, you know, none other than Ron Howard taking over. And now we have Colin Trevorrow. Now, I know, Danya, you were never a fan of Colin.
Nope.
So I'm okay.
The writing was on the wall for this one.
Yeah, I got
the moment he was hired.
Yeah.
The moment he was hired.
But see, I don't know. Like, here's the thing,
Danya. He's not a good fit. He was neither was
Phil Lord, you know, Phil Miller or Chris Lord. I don't think they're ever a good fit. But here's the thing. It's like, I like to assume positive intent in everything I do. And you know this, Danya. This is like something that's been instilled in me for years, right? So, you know, it's like, all right, you know, Phil Miller, Chris Lord, they did this. They did, you know, they did 21 Jump Street.
Chris Miller, by the way.
Yes, it is. It is Phil Lord and Chris Miller. Trust, it's a long day for me already.
You're going to say, like, anyway. Phil Trevorrow or something. And then.
Yeah.
Okay, Mikey.
It's going to be something Lucas. I don't know. Something Star Wars, anyway. Right. You know, I went and saw 21 Jump Street, because they were going to be doing a Star Wars film. And, you know, I did like Lego Movie. I didn't like Lego Batman as much. I didn't like 21 or 22 Jump Street. But I was like, I'll see what they can bring to Star Wars. And apparently, wasn't what they, you know, Star Wars wanted, and they kicked him out. You know, same thing here with Colin Trevorrow. You know, he did, you know, Jurassic World.
Which is terrible.
Which, you know, it was a popcorn film. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed the nostalgia. Okay, like it was okay. It wasn't great, but it was okay. I went and saw Book of Henry. That was really
also
bad.
Terrible.
Now, that was really bad. Like All right. Here's the thing: is I like dinosaurs. Maybe that's just like I'm a little boy and like seeing dinosaurs and stuff like that. So it was kind of fun seeing Jurassic World. And I was like, okay, we'll see what happens. And then I went and saw, you know, Book of Henry, and I was like, this is really bad. But I'm like, you know what, though? It's the third film. There's a story that's going to happen. I know they have to do rewrites because, you know, Carrie Fisher's passing was not planned, and she was obviously supposed to have a much more centered role in it. So it's like, it's all right, though. But Lucasfilm has got smart writers. They're going to figure it out. They even brought in a new writer already. You know, they brought in, what's his name? The Cursed Child guy.
Oh my god! Yeah, Jack Thorne. Terrible decision.
They brought Jack Thorne in, and I'm like, okay, you know, we'll see what happens. And then, of course, this news breaks. So, you know, you're right. The writing was on the wall, especially with Book of Henry, especially with the way he said that this is one of my best films, and it was just universally kind of panned as a pretty bad film. Like there was just a lot. I don't know if it was editing or story or direct it, and yeah, it was just pretty bad. And you know, he is responsible for that film as a whole, even if it was bad editing, you know, he signed off on it. So yeah.
So look, this is the thing as well, is that Kathleen Kennedy went on the record as saying that she didn't want to hire a female director because there were no female directors kind of experience she was looking for who would be able to direct a Star Wars movie. There isn't a woman ready for that. But by virtue of the fact having Colin Trevorrow signed on as a director at the point at which she made those statements, when he'd only made two films at that point, is and one of them being Jurassic World, the other one being like a small indie movie from which he was hired for Jurassic World, just kind of backs up this idea that if you're mediocre and white, that you tend to get more breaks in the industry because it's just assumed that because you've made a little bit of money, you're good. Whereas a lot of Jurassic World money came off the back of nostalgia. Like, that is where the money for that film came from. Like, that's why it grossed so much. And for me, like, I love dinosaurs. I absolutely love dinosaurs. I always have. I love Jurassic Park. Sequels to Jurassic Park, not so much, but I love Jurassic Park. But I can separate the fact that I absolutely love dinosaurs and the ridiculousness of Jurassic talk and the science behind it and how utterly, unashamedly, like, over the top cheesy that it could be. Like, Jurassic Park is still a good film, even with all of that. Jurassic World, you could have thrown in all of the dinosaurs in the world, and that wasn't going to make it any better of a film. And so I've stood by it since the start, saying Colin Trevorrow, under the spotlight of Lucasfilm and Disney, and how much they keep such a close eye on this. And you, like, we know Rian Johnson has had pretty much a free run at all of this. He's worked within the boundary set by Lucasfilm and Disney and seemed to flourish with his own personal creativity versus
same thing with Gareth Edwards.
Exactly.
And you have to remember both if you look at the directors they've chosen, both Gareth Edwards and Rian Johnson both have almost the same track record as Colin Trevorrow. They've done one, maybe two big films, some television, a bunch of shorts that they did in college and stuff like that, and then they did a Star Wars movie. Like,
The difference being is that Rian Johnson and Gareth Edwards, within those films, like, those films were actually decent films. They have talent, and so therefore, when put under the lens of Lucasfilm and Disney, they were never going to just flounder, because
what's
happened here is there's further stuff. Like, the further you start reading about this and going down the rabbit hole with it, the more you see, and it's basically Kathleen Kennedy tried so hard to work with him to the point of bringing in someone to fix the huge scripting issues because she didn't want to fire another director. The fact that he just couldn't do it is...
Yeah, that's almost a hubris. That's hubris on his end. You know, like, you know, think about Gareth Edwards. Like, when you think of Rogue One, we had all the rumors of, oh my gosh, there's major reshoots. And he admitted, yeah, there's a lot of reshoots. But he's like, but the reshoots weren't something that you're going to find in the deleted scenes. There isn't that type of reshoots. They reshot a bunch of the same scenes again and different things to go ahead and make the pacing at the end correct. Like, if you look at the novelization of Rogue One, and what we found out what happened was they basically made where they get the data tape to where they transmit it as one building, right? But in the original shots and the original thing they did, it was two different buildings. So the pacing for the end just didn't work. They have to then travel somewhere else to go ahead and transmit the plans. So what they ended up having to do is they had to reshoot a bunch of stuff to go ahead and make it work as one building. So I totally understand, like, him taking that, you know, learning from it and going with it. You know, same thing with Rian Johnson. You know, he's constantly said that he's had a lot of creative freedom, just like you mentioned, Danya. But I think that's also where they're both willing to take criticism and actually grow from it. Whereas I feel, even, you know, when you look at, you know, Chris Miller and Phil Lord, you know, the stuff that they've done, you know, like, the stuff that they've done, they've had a lot of control over it. And when you look at what they've been doing with the Han Solo film, you know, they wanted to do a lot of more slapstick comedy based on what we've heard from it. And they were constantly heads.
Han Solo.
That's not Han Solo. And obviously, Disney's going to protect their property. And they were constantly butting heads with the studio. So much so that even, Alden Ehrenreich, the guy who's playing Han Solo, was kind of worried. He's like, I don't know if my character is being Han Solo. You know, he's talked to Harrison Ford. He's watched all the movies. He's playing a young version of him. So he's going to do his homework. And he's worried about it. Like, when you have that many people worried about it, and you go to watch the, you know, the dailies, and then you're just not seeing it, there's obviously some miscommunication. And obviously, they can't have full, complete reign with a property that is as big as Star Wars. You know, if it was a one-off film with no character, like, no characters from any of the trilogy or anything like that, and it wasn't, like, a pivotal one, if it was a Rebels movie, if it was a Star Wars Rebels movie, live-action movie, I guarantee you Dave Filoni would have full reign to be able to do whatever the heck he wanted. He could bring in stuff from the EU, make it canon, and I guarantee you Disney would probably say, okay, as long as it wasn't so far off the wall that it didn't make sense. Why? Because it's not going to tie to the original franchise. Like, it's not going to damage any of the original franchise stuff. But, you know, like, this, you're right. I'm a little disappointed that they've got rid of another director. But you have to remember, they hired him back in 2015.
Yeah.
We're now 27. You know, 2 years have passed, you know.
I'm not at all disappointed that they've got rid of another director. And maybe this is where I'm different to a lot of other fans, because I've seen a lot of commentary, even the commentary that happened on Hyperbole, like, talking about how, like, oh, is this, like, just showing, like, Lucasfilm being, like, too tight-fisted with their properties, like, giving no creative freedom at all, when realistically we know that's not the case. Rian Johnson's been quite open with, like, how much he's been able to play within the film and within the universe and push the boundaries of it, as long as he was open to criticism and as long as he was open to feedback and kind of, and like, it's a given,
well, and it's Filoni's a give and take. Yeah, it's a give and take completely. Filoni has said the same thing, and Gareth Edwards has said the same thing, and even J.J. Abrams, you know, he said it from the beginning, like, there was a lot of give and take between him and Kathleen Kennedy and all of them, so I think it's definitely a two-way street, and I think it's probably more oversight than most directors are used to.
Yeah, but when you have all of these films have to, like, feed into each other, and you're building, or they're trying to build a cohesive universe, like, you have the issue, like, as much as I love the Marvel movies, they, as much as they like to tout their tagline, it's all connected, there is so much disassociation between some of the films when they're building that universe. There are some things that directly contradict each other. There are things that make no sense from one film to the other, or they, like, completely drop storylines and forget to pick them back up, or character arcs are entirely different in one film to the next, to the point where it seems like they're completely different characters. Or even sometimes they regress to being a character that they were 3-4 films ago because they feel like that's what best serves the story at that point. So they just undo all of the character development because it's too hard to write the character as they've developed to. And so there's a lot of issues in the Marvel Cinematic Universe with that. And I say that as someone who absolutely loves Marvel movies, the comics, everything. But Lucasfilm and Star Wars and Disney have a much, much closer eye on the Star Wars universe. They are not necessarily kind of being, like, really strict with it in the sense of they're like, oh no, you just can't do anything. It has to be this, 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 this. They're not really doing that, but I feel like as long as it's got a cohesive through line through the entire trilogy, then you can work around that. But they want to make sure that it has that kind of through line. They don't want, like, so for example, they don't want to see maybe Finn as he is when he picks up in The Last Jedi be the Finn that we saw right at the beginning of Force Awakens, because he's grown as a character. Same for Rey, same for any of the characters. You don't want them to regret. So I feel like where they've got this control and they're guiding it, it's less to do with wanting complete control over it and more just ensuring that there's a natural progression that goes forward and doesn't regret, because there are a lot of cinematic universes that do and are, and watch it, and when you don't have someone overseeing it all, you just get something that's disjointed, disconnected. So I am far happier to see them let directors go that cannot work within that frame, like, within that wireframe of, like, how this universe works, how the creative process works. If they can't work within that give and take, I would rather them gone. Colin Trevorrow was the worst appointment by far that they make. By far. And I've said it, and I will continue to say it, and I never wanted to actually see him get that film through to theaters, his script, or his actual film. Like, I just didn't want it at all, because I don't rate him at all as a writer, as a producer, as a director. I think he didn't deserve that chance in the place of other people.
I guess on the subject of continuity, like, the question is kind of asked. I mean, people are already talking about the fact that, you know, Lucasfilm's happy with how Rian Johnson's done, and they might consider giving 9 to him, like they did with, like, they gave David Yates the rest of Harry Potter, and, like, Francis Lawrence the rest of The Hunger Games because of their work, and saying, like, if they carry it through, then they have the same kind of
tone of and continuity. Pace.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. And though that maybe, I mean, if that happens and they love, you know, what he's done, and we love Last Jedi, you know, then I can totally see that, especially because they have to start filming in January or something.
Yeah.
But I'm also, I'm just like, are they going to push it till, like, Christmas 2019 like they did with the other two because of this whole director thing? Because what if somebody's not...
Well, I think they'll find a director by then. That's not a problem. But I think it's a matter of finding a script that's ready to start shooting by then.
Sure, yeah.
Because that's, another director is going to come in and is going to want to put his take on it. Even with, you know, Thorne rewriting what was there.
Well, if Rian Johnson returns, he might just write it himself. Because that's what he
well,
just
yeah,
did.
Well, yeah, and that's, you know, we'll see. But
I feel like whoever they get in, and it's, okay, I will say it now, it's more than likely going to be Rian Johnson.
Right.
I would love to see a female director.
That's what I was going to ask. I was going to say, female director, Patty Jenkins has been tossed around already, obviously, because Wonder Woman was such a success, and she has the credibility as a female director to be able to helm such a big film. What are your opinions if she was to get it?
Isn't she doing Wonder Woman 2? So she would, unless she has the schedule.
Yeah, well, unless she has the schedule, then maybe not. I was thinking maybe
I would rather see her do Wonder Woman 2 because she did such a good job with the first one.
I mean, I'd love to see Ava DuVernay do it.
Oh, yeah. That's
okay.
And she already has a relationship with Disney, having done Wrinkle in Time, which is coming out soon. And so,
I feel like Disney wants to see how that goes first.
I mean, have you seen the... But she's an incredible director. And she also helped J.J. Abrams with the lightsaber battle between Kylo Ren and Rey in The Force Awakens. She actually gave feedback and assistance and made tweaks and gave him advice for how to adjust that.
What?
So... Yeah, so she's already had input into Star Wars already in this trilogy. So, and she's trusted by other directors.
Well, and also
her feedback. So,
well, and Ava DuVernay is also, like, she's a LA native. You know, so if you look at her IMDb page, she's got what, 150 entries as miscellaneous crew. Like, she's done everything from, you know, showrunner to, you know, miscellaneous crew. I'm looking at some of the credits here. Uncredited publicity consultant, you know, productions, post promotional services, post production services. Like, you know, as someone who grows up in LA, like I grew up in LA, I did everything from, you know, craft services on short films and different productions to editorial work to camera work to director. Like, you do a lot of that stuff. Like, when you want to get in the industry, you'll take any job, any gig you can get, because you learn from every single one of them. You know, I even worked on things like there's an event in LA called that basically they show off all the independent films and the studios come in and buy it. I was there for a lot of different films, but it's the same places where, like, they buy, you know, they bought Napoleon Dynamite for $4 million and then Fox Searchlight releases it and they make a lot more. But I was there literally for 18 hours setting up booths and stuff like that for these films to come in. Like, you kind of do everything. And she is a native that does that. So she has things like Selma under her belt and A Wrinkle in Time. Like, she could be a phenomenal director for Star Wars. But, like you said, I think Rian Johnson's probably going to be the biggest front runner for it.
Mikey, who's your pick if it's not Ryan Johnson?
If it's not Ryan Johnson, there was a really fun article on Mashable. And it was actually, before I even read the article, it kind of came to my mind also. I'm like, I wonder if they would do this. I wouldn't mind seeing George Lucas direct it.
No.
I just threw up.
And now, hold on. So now, Mashable has this wonderful article of five reasons why George Lucas won't direct Star Wars Episode 9, okay, and one reason why he should.
I have five reasons, right, to back up my choice, so when you're done...
All right, so the first reason why is he'd have to answer to Kathleen Kennedy. You know, she was once the learner, but now she is the master. Like, basically, he appointed her, he sold the company, he has no control in it, but Kathleen Kennedy would be able to veto him, and she had a great relationship with him before. But that would be something. He also doesn't play well with writers, but we know from the prequels that, you know, he has some flaws. Well, no, his first two movies he directed, THX 1138 and American Graffiti. I just rewatched American Graffiti with my mom not too long ago. And it's a great film, and he did a phenomenal job on that. But, you know, that's a different time, different budget, you know, different things. You know, he had to scrimp a little bit. He is still mad that Disney dumped his sequel trilogy ideas. You know, he was kind of mad about it at the release of Force Awakens. He called Disney white slavers at one point in time. He's also a little busy right now doing the Lucas Museum of Narrative Art, which is going to be in, he had some false starts in San Francisco and Chicago for doing this, but he's making his own museum. And he's also really upset with a lot of the fans. You know, Lucas was a huge fan of kind of working with the fans, and Lucas was very shy and offensive at best, but based on how the prequels were, when, you know, fans would yell at him and say, "You raped my childhood, you're a terrible person," like, you don't want to come back to any of that. But at the same time, you know, if you look at the Star Wars story in general, like, he is the creator of it, but it's not like he did anything magical about it, if you will. Like, it's the hero's journey set in space, and he constantly, you know, refers to all his inspiration that made it, and it makes sense. Like, he had the right formula, he put the right pieces together to make this amazing thing, which is Star Wars and the universe that it is. But at the same time, think about it as a redemption arc for him. Like, if he does Episode 9, and instead of, like, the prequels where he's surrounded by a bunch of people saying, "Oh, yes, that's great, and there's no criticism, if he goes back to, like, he did A New Hope, where he gets criticism, he's adhered to a studio, he has a budget, he can't go do whatever he wants with it, right? You know, it might just be amazing, and it might be the redemption he needs, him personally as a director, with Star Wars fans, for them to love him again. So not only would it be a great ending to the Star Wars saga, or the 9 episode arc, if you will, and, you know, they might do more, but, like, to the 9 original that he kind of said, but it would be nice to have him on it, and then people like it. So so like I said, there's lots of reasons for him not to be it, but if I had anyone, and if he was willing to, you know, take criticism, have someone else write it, him work with the writers, I think George Lucas would be a pretty awesome choice. Even if he had someone like Ron Howard step in, or even Ryan Johnson be there to help him along the way, like, having Luke, you know, him directing it with someone else, like, I think it would be awesome to have Lucas direct the last film.
But the two major parts, I feel, of why the original trilogy actually worked are no longer there, and are no longer available, which is George Lucas's ex-wife and Carrie Fisher. They were two of the major reasons why the original trilogy worked. And we can hold up George Lucas as, like, the father of the original trilogy, but a lot of what actually made it to the screen was in huge part thanks to his ex-wife. And a lot of the rest of it was adjusted dialogue by Carrie Fisher. So I don't know that I would want him to come back, because I feel like the women who were involved with the original trilogy are, in a lot of ways, the reason why it did so well, though they may not get the credit for it, because they haven't asked for it. So I don't know that I do want him to have the redemption arc. He has no personal connection to this story. He has no personal connection to these new characters. They are not his. They were not created by him. They may take influence from the expanded universe and
now,
legends.
Hold on. He does have relation to these characters. He's got Luke Skywalker.
Yeah.
Luke is still there. Unless you know something about him dying in Last Jedi that we don't know. Like,
but one character,
he still has that.
One character is not an entire film.
Yeah, true. But
I'm talking about. But the whole thing has moved on to the new trio. You know, and not even just the new trio. It's now expanding into new characters. Kylo Ren isn't his. Phasma isn't his. Snoke isn't his. Hux isn't his. Poe Dameron, Rey, Finn, Rose, Paige, all of these characters are not his original creation. And I feel like Disney scrapping his entire idea for the sequel trilogy has already disconnected him from it, because they are not what he envisioned. Yes,
no,
Luke may be the last character from the originals that remains, that was George Lucas's creation, but then Luke's trajectory to where he is in this trilogy is very much and very likely not the vision that George Lucas would have had for him. And all of the new characters that have come in are not George Lucas's vision for the trilogy. Therefore, I don't necessarily think that he is the right person for it, because how much, when something like Star Wars was your baby, when it was your entire thing, how much can you disconnect your personal emotions from that, knowing that none of this was what you wanted?
If I got $4 billion like he did, I'd probably be okay with it.
Yeah, but then why would you come back?
Well, if he was asked to do it, like, again, it's one of those things, like, I don't think they would. But it wouldn't be a horrible thing if he was asked and he accepted. I don't think it would. And think about, like, if you come back to, like, his entire original, you know, prequel trilogy was all about prophecy of bringing balance to the Force. You know, depending on what we find out in The Last Jedi, this might be the perfect time for him to actually be able to do that. You know, it would be fun. Okay, so obviously, it would be fun.
I disagree. I actually want, because I know Ben has a lot of rebuttals that he wanted to bring in as well, so I kind of want to give Ben a moment.
My role on this show is to, like, sit, listen, and think.
I kind of like, okay. I respectfully disagree. I get that for a lot of people that they would want it, but I don't. I think for me it would be on par as a bad decision bringing Colin Trevorrow on. Because I respect George Lucas as the person who brought Star Wars into our lives, but I feel like at this point, in terms of the creation and in terms of moving the story forward, he's done for me. I'm happy, and I'm willing to be like, his journey has ended with Star Wars.
Okay.
And I can appreciate and love.
Maybe Star Wars is an abusive relationship to me, and I just keep coming back to George. Maybe that's what it is.
I mean, personally, there are 6 women that I would want to see get the chance to direct a Star Wars film before George Lucas was even back in the conversation.
Okay, what if it was Ron Howard?
No,
why not? He did Willow, and he's doing the Han Solo film.
Look. I would rather...
Mikey, why? Why did you say this?
So I would rather either see Rian Johnson continue on for consistency's sake, or for a woman to get a chance to tell the final part of the story because massively for me, like, the huge thing is that there has been no woman officially involved in a Star Wars film in the trilogy, in the Star Wars saga trilogies at all. And that in 9 films is unbelievable. Like, especially for a studio that keeps touting this idea of wanting to push women forward. So, and especially with a film that now has a female lead at the center of it. And I would want, before any other white man gets a chance at coming back to this trilogy, whether they've been involved in it already or whatever, I would love to see a woman get a shot. Because one out of nine films, you cannot tell me that a woman doesn't deserve and doesn't have the talent or the ability to direct this film.
I do. Can I just put one more name out there also? That might be a little off the wall. What about Jake Kasdan? The guy who did, he's done a lot of different things, but most recently, Jumanji, Welcome to the Jungle. That's kind of the MO of the Star Wars directors. I'm just saying, it's another white guy. He's done another reboot film. He's got The Rock in it. Jake Kasdan? No?
I'm confused by you, Mikey.
I play the opposite.
I play a lot of Devil's Advocate, and you guys know this. Yeah, but
and the thing is that Devil's Advocate sometimes is not helpful. Like, it's just frustrating, and sometimes it just gets upsetting, because it just keeps, it kind of invalidates a lot of the arguments then, because it's kind of like, but both sides of the argument are still valid. And
well,
it's
no,
kind
it's
of,
not. It's not. It, like, it's like I said, if like, I had... like I said, you're right. Probably going to be Rian Johnson. And, you know, Lucas doesn't have Marshall Lucas with him anymore to go ahead and edit for him. Probably won't be him. He's got plenty of things on his plate. But, you know, it would be interesting to see what they choose. Like, it's up in the air. Now, Ben, I know you have a lot of rebuttals, so go ahead and tell me why Lucas...
I don't have a lot of rebuttals. I just have my... By 2 cents.
Would never be
issue.
Put your 2 cents in. Ben.
So, and I also have reasons to back up why I think it's a good idea, and also to back up why it's not going to happen. So, before you answer, I'll probably debunk my own thing, but I would love to see Steven Spielberg do it, because he was supposed to do Return of the Jedi, but the whole Directors Guild fiasco prevented him from doing so. And then his relationship with Kathleen Kennedy, excuse me, is like similar to George Lucas's, because they both worked with her. Like, you know, Kathleen Kennedy has worked on, you know, E.T., Jurassic Park, Indiana Jones, you know, all of Spielberg's kind of greatest hits.
She's working with him again on the new indie.
Right,
we just
exactly.
got news about
because,
that.
I mean,
we even
just
got
Lucas
news
film.
About that without Shia LaBeouf.
Yeah, and that's a Lucasfilm property, too. So, like, the partnership is there already. And plus he would be, I mean, when you kept saying, like, you know, like George Lucas coming back would, like, you know, be a good bookend to whatever. I'm like, well, I think Steven Spielberg getting the shot that he was supposed to, in 1983 too, would be really cool. And then I don't know, on top of that, like, just, I've been rewatching, this is weird. In the past couple weeks, I've been on like a Spielberg kick because they re-released, Close Encounters in theaters. And so I just rewatched a couple of the Indiana Jones, E.T. and stuff like that. Just, like, I don't know, if he can, like, dip into his kind of renaissance from the 80s, and finish off this, I guess, trilogy, but also this 9 movies, I think he could do a fantastic job. That, and I mean, like, it would be, like, his and John Williams' 30th movie, I think, so that would be kind of beautiful. He's not going to do it because he's talked about, like, not stepping on George's baby. And also, he's still, like, if they're still going to shoot starting in January, which I don't think they will, but if they are, he's still working on Ready Player One, and his schedule won't be open, so it's not even going to be an option. But, my 2 cents was definitely Steven Spielberg. But there are plenty of other... It's probably going to be Ryan Johnson. I mean, like, I feel like we're all ending our conversations with that because it's true.
Yeah. And he's come out and said that he had such a good time filming The Last Jedi that if they wanted him back, that he would do it. Like, right.
He said, I would do another. Like, in a heartbeat, and we've also I've had the time of my life.
Yeah, we've seen, like I said before, we've seen the thing happen with the end of Harry Potter, with the end of the Hunger Games. Series like the continuity of having that director, that, and especially if you have a good experience with the director, because we haven't heard news of, like, any hiccups whatsoever between, like, Kathleen Kennedy and Ryan Johnson. Which means he's worked well within the constraints of Lucasfilm, but also been creative himself.
The biggest thing we've heard is that he's had a lot of creative input, and he's taking the story somewhere we've never seen it go before. And that's not, Lucasfilm doing that. That's him and his writing of the film. So I mean, that tells me that
in that featurette, he had the clear support of the actors and stuff too. So that's nice to see.
Yeah, so I agree. I think it's going to be Rian Johnson that does it. Danya, in a perfect world, I know you said Ava. Is there anyone else you would like, or is that who you want it to be?
No, I've got, like I said, there's probably six female directors just off the top of my head that I'm like, yeah, okay, these ones, I would love to see a Star Wars film from them. So they are Ava DuVernay and Patty Jenkins, like you said. But also Lexi Alexander, Rachel Talalay, Karen Kusama, and Michelle McLaren. They're all female directors that I would like, that I feel would work very, very well with Lucasfilm, would work very, very well with sort of give and take of working on a Star Wars film, and would all come out an incredible film with a point of view that we have not had the privilege of.
So can I ask you a question, Danya? Mm-hmm. Based on what you just said, would you want them to do episode 9 if they were given the chance, or do you think they'd be better suited for a standalone film to be able to bring life into their own characters and really develop that versus kind of continuing on?
Why not both?
Well, no, I know. I was just asking, like, would you, because we didn't, you mentioned earlier that Kathleen Kennedy said she doesn't know any female directors yet. And obviously, as time has gone on, since she said that.
That's the problem that I have with Kathleen Kennedy. So, like, I very much feel like Kathleen Kennedy is not a particularly great feminist at all. Based very firmly on how she upholds white feminism above all others, and also how she has this kind of internalized misogyny of she is upholding female directors to a completely different standard to which they have to live up to before they are ready for a Star Wars film, when all of the current, or pretty much most of the current directors of the Star Wars standalones and the Star Wars saga films have very little to no experience themselves. Obviously, Ron Howard and J.J. Abrams being the exceptions in those cases. But all of the directors that I listed off have just as much experience as Colin Trevorrow, as Gareth Edwards, as Rian Johnson. So, I feel like we just need more women involved at any level, script writing, like the directors, anything, just please. There are women who are ready, and I think it's just irresponsible to say that they're not.
Okay. No, I agree with you. I think they are. But the question was, like I said, the real reason was, do you feel like they'd be able to excel again?
Yes.
I know. Excel in if they were given one chance, if any of those directors were given one chance, would they excel better in a standalone film or continuing on episode 9? It was, is where my question would be.
I mean, I feel like that's false equivalence. like, I feel as though they, like, I listed those ones specifically because I feel like they would work very well in the same way that Rian Johnson did within that environment of being, it being very much a give and take relationship. And they, so yes, I absolutely feel as though they'd be able to excel doing episode 9. But do I also feel that they'd be great at doing something with their own characters in a standalone film? Yeah, absolutely. Like, the two aren't mutually exclusive. I specifically listed these.
What I was trying to get to was more, do you feel that they would be better suited than Rian Johnson for episode 9? Versus doing their own films, which is really what, you know, because we I think we all kind of come to the conclusion that we feel like Rian Johnson would probably be the best choice for episode 9.
I feel but, like, you know, he is going to be the choice for episode 9. Would I still prefer to see a female director come in over Rian Johnson? Yes, I absolutely want to see a female director get a shot. Finally, at a Star Wars film. But would I be unhappy seeing Rian Johnson continue on? No, because here's the thing. He has been a better feminist than Kathleen Kennedy has, and has done a hell of a lot better from what we've seen so far with making sure that women are involved a lot more. And also worked very, very closely with Carrie Fisher, even though she's not officially part of, like, the script writing crew and all of that, he still told, like, a lot of stories about working alongside Carrie Fisher to work on the dialogue and how scenes flowed and stuff like that. So, you know, he specifically was seeking her out for her opinion and her feedback. And we know how good she is. But, so, I feel like he's been involving women quite heavily all along the way.
Well, yeah, so. And he also has Paige and Rose as two new characters, both women of color, and, you know,
and
apparently
he's the first
both been prompted
one to do that. So, if I was to like again, I would still love to and prefer to see a female director do episode 9, and that is both from the perspective of, like, 1 out of 9 films, or even more than 9 films at this point, because we'll have the standalone films that will have come out then. The fact that there hasn't been one is unbelievable. Like, it's absolutely ridiculous. So, one, in that I'm pretty sure the odds should be in favor of, like, there being at least one. Like, come on. And also because talent is there. Some of them are, I feel, the best people for the job. But I guess we'll just have to wait and see. Honestly, I think that Lucasfilm will go with the safest bet, and their safest bet is keeping Rian Johnson.
Okay. Well, I will tell you this. We are running a little long here, so I think our topic, our conversation about Biggs, may have to be picked up next week. Anything else about Colin Trevorrow leaving Star Wars Episode 9?
Other than, like, I just...
Hallelujah.
It's a long time coming. Yeah, basically, it was just a long time coming.
Any last thoughts, Ben, on George Lucas's director?
Yesterday, I was kind of... Well, I don't know. It was like a mix of a surprise, but also like a thank goodness.
Yeah, so I don't think anyone really is upset about this. I will say, I don't think anyone's really upset about Colin Trevorrow leaving. Like, even though I saw it, I was like, eh, oh well. Like, I'm not really upset about it at all.
Right.
I was a little bit... I feel like the... like I said, I felt like another one bites the dust because... It's what it is, you know. I wasn't really too worried about it. I was a little more surprised about the Han Solo, you know, mix-up. But as all the drama and everything started to come out from that, I was like, you know, I'm glad they changed it. You know, Josh Trank, you know, that was a non-start at all.
Yeah, my big thing, and I don't know if this is going to happen unless, of course, Rian Johnson's working on it, and then he's going to have a script ready that they don't push it. Because having it come out, because I know that Last Jedi was supposed to come out May 2017 as well, like a year and a half after Force Awakens. That's the case with Episode 9 right now, and I would love that, because something tells me that Last Jedi is not going to have a satisfactory ending. So, you know, having less time, you know, between the two would be nice.
But I don't want them to, well, and we'll see what happens, because right now they have Jack Thorne rewriting Episode 9, right. So we'll see.
I feel like if they bring on Rian Johnson, he'll just, like, slap the script out of his hand and be like, leave.
Jack Thorne is not good at writing women. Full stop.
But isn't our main characters women? Is it Rey?
Yeah, woman? That's why, okay. I've been saying just this is just a terrible, sure, like, choice. So Jack Thorne is terrible at writing women. Just reread The Cursed Child to see how Scorpio badly he handled, like,
you know,
even involving Rose Granger Weasley just in the entire thing. Look at how minimized she was throughout the whole thing. And I also saw his Wojciech play recently in London. Also, like, his particular interpretation of it, as much as John Boyega was excellent in that play, he didn't do so well with writing the female character. Again, I don't know, just there's a lot when it comes to female characters, not great. So I feel like if Rian Johnson does continue on, there will be a lot of readdressing the script. Because
I'm sure they
Rian will. Rian Johnson, from the way that he just conducts himself in interviews and the way that he just talks about women, like, you can, it's very telling. It's very, very telling that he has the utmost respect and tries very, very hard and listens. So, and a lot of the time, the listening part, that's the part that doesn't happen. So, for me, I feel like we're probably going to see a delay, particularly if Rian Johnson carries on, most especially if a female director comes in, because without a shadow of a doubt, I would put good money on it that neither Colin Trevorrow nor Jack Thorne have written any satisfying stuff for the female character at all. Full stop.
Okay. I actually, the funny part is I believe that 100%. I'm trying to play devil's advocate on some of this, and I just can't. It's just too hard.
You can't. And sometimes you don't.
Sometimes just to make sure the conversation goes where I want it to go. Anyway, anything else about Colin Trevorrow, guys?
This is the official goodbye episode to Colin Trevorrow. Like, we'll never have to talk about him again, fingers crossed.
Can I call this bye-bye-bye and just, like, have him, like, hanging? Never mind. I'm not going to do a mock-up of...
No, there's a better name for this episode, Somewhere in the Universe.
Somewhere in the Universe. Anyway, Biggs, we'll get to you next week, I promise. That, you know, yeah, Tatooine farmer, like Luke.
For the listener, I put on the chat, I was like, should we just make an episode about the director swap? And Mikey was like, no, it's in the news. That's all. I'm like,
okay. It's news. Like,
it's big news.
It is big news, but so is Biggs. Biggs is pretty big. Get it?
Biggs news. Nice. That'll be the title of next week's episode.
Biggs is the news. It's Biggs. Anyway.
No, just
thank you all for listening.
You can't.
Thank you all for
listening. Okay.
I can't close out, can I? Can I? Thanks, Ben. I appreciate that. Thank you all for listening to another episode of Resistance Radio. Feel free to reach out to us on Twitter at @RRadioPodcast or on Facebook at facebook.com/resistanceradiopodcast. Remember to visit our Patreon page at patreon.com/resistanceradiopodcast. As always, I'm Mikey B.
I'm Danya.
And I'm Ben.
And may the Force be with you.
And also with you.